Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Vav. And we've got some ways to go yet in this machlokas that we began discussing yesterday about what the din is if somebody gives chalitza to a pregnant woman. So the question is split between situations, because we've got a situation where that woman ultimately has a viable child. Now, in that case, everybody agrees that in that she never was a Yevama, and therefore the chalitza is meaningless, and obviously it wasn't needed either. And that's the case where the Mishnah says that in the end, the chalitza doesn't even passel her for a kohen and doesn't create any kind of relationship of achot chalutzato. He's not usher and her relative, she is an usher and he is. But what about in the case where there was not a viable child? So there we have a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. If he had done the yibum or the chalitza during the time that she was pregnant, and then it turns out subsequently that that pregnancy never brought us a viable child, and therefore she really was chayeves in yibum, so we have a machlokas. We said yesterday it might be based on how to understand the pasuk of Ben Einlo, which is Ayin. It might be dependent in Svara. But the bottom line is that according to Rabbi Yochanan, whatever was done during the period of the pregnancy, which ended up being a futile pregnancy, and whatever ended up in the end as a real yibum was a real yibum, because it turns out now that we look back l'mafreya and we say, well, she really did need yibum, even though she looked like she had a child, but she didn't. In the end, it turned out it wasn't a live child. And according to Reish Lakish, no, it's meaningless during the time of the yibum. He's going to have to go and be miyabim her again, or if he did chalitza, it was meaningless chalitza, and we're going to need a chalitza. That was the machlokas that we had yesterday. So we had a number of discussions, points, how to understand the Mishnah, different ways that Reish Lakish understood things, different ways that Rava understood things. And one of the most striking things that we came out with at the end is that the Braita, which seemed to be saying anything but the approach of Rabbi Yochanan, so what it was that we understood it when it said that if somebody is kones a yevama, that over there if she turns out to be mimuberet, then the tsara cannot get married. And there it says shema yehi vlad ben kayoma, which didn't make any sense. If the vlad is a ben kayoma, why wouldn't the tsara get married? And the brilliant answer was not because of the fact that we don't have a chalitza, because, I mean, it strikes us as, look, mumanavshach, the tzara can definitely get married, because one way or the other, if this child is a ben kayama, so then there's no chiyuv of yibum. And if this child was not a ben kayama, so then we ended up doing a chalitza during the time that she was pregnant, because it turns out that that pregnancy didn't change anything, according to Rabbi Yochanan. So why can we not go ahead and allow the tzara to marry on the basis of that mamonavshah? So the beautiful pshat that was offered yesterday by Rava was because in the event that the pregnancy was a viable pregnancy, then everybody, of course, agrees that the biur chalitza was not viable, right? It was not meaningful. So then, okay, so you'll say mamonavshah. No, Gavi, stop, come back. You won't say mamonavshah. Why? Because in the event that, in fact, there was a viable pregnancy, you have to wait for the child to be born in order to be potter. That was the brilliant chiddush. Therefore, during that period, she can't get married, because if it is a good pregnancy, then she can't get married. Quite amazing, right? Okay, so that's what we're up to yesterday. Now, today, what we'd like to do is see whether we can actually switch and utilize the very thing that was previously considered to be a question, now that Rava has given this beautiful explanation. If we bring a raya from a braisa to Rava, then we can end up asking Akasha, even on Reish Lakish. And in fact, the last thing that we learned, I think we learned yesterday, was Tanya Kavasidurava, about one-fifth of the way down. So Tanya Kavasidurava, and in fact, there's a Braita that says word for word what Rava said. Yes. Namely, Hakones Yivim Tov. So the tzara cannot get married, Shema Yevlad Ben Kayama, because if it is a good pregnancy, then the bia or the chalitza will not have been potted her to allow her to marry. In the event that there is a pregnancy, only the birth of the child will allow her to marry. So the Vlad will be the poter, but the Vlad ain't a poter. Ad sheyatza leavir ha'olam. Perfect. Word for word what Rav said yesterday. Now, says the Gemara, but wait. If this is true, then Reish Lakish is in big trouble. Because Taima de Shemayeh Vlad ben Kayama, the only reason that we're saying that the Tzara cannot marry is because maybe the child will be a real bevad. And there you have so sorry. And there you'll have to wait for the birth. Okay, fine. But what would be in the other case? Holo havi Vlad ben Kayama. But if the Vlad was not viable, then what? Then she would have been allowed to marry, right? The only reason she's not allowed to marry is because we're worried that maybe the Vlad is a ben Kayama. That would mean, why is she allowed to marry? Because the yibum or the chalitza that was done during pregnancy was perfectly okay, which is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said, and exactly the opposite of what Reish Lakish says. So we seem to have a clear tiyufta for Reish Lakish here. Lema tavi tiyufta de Reish Lakish. How in the world will Reish Lakish possibly explain this braita if it's saying that the only reason that she's got a problem is because the child may, yes, be viable? But that's not true. According to Reish Lakish, she's got a problem if the child is not viable, too. Amalacha Reish Lakish, you don't understand the braita. The braita is talking about two things. There's a little bit between the lines over here, this braita, that you're going to have to expand on, says Reish Lakish. Here's the way to think about it. Okay. The braita is saying like this. Somebody goes out and he's Kones Yevimto, and she's pregnant. The tzara cannot get married. Why? So the first it is Shema Lo Yehei of Vlad ben Kayama. Yeah, that's obvious that she can't get married because maybe there was no chalitza, because the chalitza v'muberet is not called a chalitza, like I'm saying. A bia v'muberet is not called a bia. That's the point. Now, you're saying, okay, but that's not what the braita says, Reish Lakish. So, I mean, what about the last part that says, Shema Yehia ben, that's something else. Then the braita adds, now, in the event that you're thinking, well, look, why not? I mean, after all, you can go after the rov, can't you? V'im tomar halecha harov nashim, v'rov nashlim vlad malya yalda. Why don't we say that we should simply go according to the rov? And most women that are pregnant, they give birth to a viable child. Then adds the braita, don't give me that argument, because then for sure she won't be able to get married, because vlad is enopoter hachietzil aviral. So it works out very well, according to me, too, although I must admit I have to insert quite a bit between the lines. But the braita wasn't talking about why she can't get married only because of Vlad is Ben Kayama. The braita was saying even if the Vlad is a Ben Kayama, she couldn't get married now. Omar Rabbi Elazar, because we're going to find out later that there are three cases in Shas where we paskin like Reish Lakish, and this is one of them. So is it really possible that Efshe Yitel Hoder Reish Lakish V'lo Tanan La B'Matnitin? So you're telling me that that's the way we're going to end up saying, and you're saying that we can't find any Mishnah, we can't find any Braita that says like Reish Lakish? I find it difficult to believe, because, I mean, if this is what we end up being Seimech on, we never would have said the halachas like Reish Lakish over Rabbi Yochanan unless we had a good reason to say so. So far, everything that we've seen certainly seems to be noted towards Rabbi Yochanan, not towards Reish Lakish. So where is that place that everybody is apparently relying on Ah, he went out, Nafak, he was Medayek, and sure enough, he found what he was certain must be hidden somewhere. The Tanan, because it does say in the Mishnah, much later, it says, in the event that a woman's husband accompanies his other wife overseas. So the two of them go overseas, leaving this poor other wife to sit and wonder about all the nice hotels that they're at and the sailboats that they're on. And meanwhile, she's hoping to drown. But anyway, and they come and they tell her, he drowned. Oh, she says, terrible, terrible. Anyway, so then can she get married? No, it says. Harezo lotina se velotit yabem. She can't either get yibam or get married because she has to find out what the situation is with the other woman. Because if the other woman, her tzara, if the other woman is pregnant, then she's got a problem because then she's not able to get yibam because the pregnancy, we don't know the status of the pregnancy. It may be that there'll be a viable child, but then she's going to have to wait until the end of the period that the child would have been born. So what can you do? So she can't get Yibum, she can't get married until she finds out what happened to that Tzara. Now, the question is, why does this make sense? This is how Rebbe Elazar is bringing his riot. Bishlami Yavume. Now, I understand why it says that she can't go be mityabemet. Well, obviously she can't be mityabemet. I mean, what happens if the Vlad is a Ben Kayama? She's going to be over in Israel. She's actually ridiculous. So of course she can't be mityabemet. That's a given. Because there'll be pogebi Israel shetach diorita. But I don't understand. Couldn't she just go and get chalitza, right? And then she could get married. Because if the halakha would be like Rabbi Yochanan, the chalitza of a pregnant woman is good, so then she should be able to do that, right? So am I. Now, I understand that even if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan, she would still have to wait 9 months until after her husband dies because maybe the other wife was pregnant and it would take 9 months to give birth. Okay, fine. So I understand. Yes, that's because of the suffix that we said that maybe the child actually will survive, right? So I have to wait until the child is born. But why can't she simply go get chalitza within those 9 months and immediately she start planning her wedding, basically, and immediately get married right after the 9 months? Because, I mean, if she got chalitza during that period, so then she's definitely, one way or the other, she's going to be okay after 9 months pass. Either the child was born or there was no child and she already got the chalitza. If you're telling, I mean, look, this sounds like a small issue, but it's a major question. But what happens if one of the brothers is around now? You know, it's, I mean, this happens all the time, by the way, even today, where it's very difficult to get people together in order to do chalitza. One of them is living in Israel. One of them is living in Australia. The woman's in Israel. The potential yavam, he's not particularly interested in giving chalitza and getting spit at. So thanks. I'll come with your free ticket some other time. I mean, so obviously, if she can get chalitza, why should we not allow her to get chalitza now? But since it says she can't do anything, so what does that mean, says Rebbe Elazar? It means that the halacha is like Rish Lakish. If she got chalitza now, it wouldn't have worked. Because meanwhile, the tzara might have been pregnant, and she doesn't know. Therefore, she has to sit around and wait and wait and wait and wait until she would find out what the situation would be. Says the Gemara, excuse me, but according to you, I mean, why can't she do chalitza and get married after the 9 months pass? I mean, you're understanding that saying over here, she can never get married and she can never do chalitza until she finds out what happened with the other woman. So how are you explaining it? You're not explaining it either. You're saying, what happens if he's in town? And what happens if he's in town after 9 months? It says over here also she can't get married. So what's the matter with you? Obviously, this Mishnah is completely irrelevant. So it's a sort of Barnea Barminado. Just forget about this Mishnah at all. The Barnea is not even here. I can't even start up with it. No fun. So Ela Barminado, throw that Mishnah out. For this, it's irrelevant because Abaye Bar Abba and Reb Chinina Bar Abaye both say that there's a completely different issue that's involved over here. And that is, if the Vlad turns out to be viable, and she got chalitza, so then you're going to have to end up, we then get the news that she actually didn't even need chalitza, right? So now she wants to marry a kohen. But wait a minute, she got chalitza. Yeah, but the Mishnah says if it turns out that she was pregnant, the chalitza doesn't matter. Well, I understand the chalitza doesn't matter. But I mean, Lamaisa, you are going to have to make that clear to people, aren't you? Otherwise, people are going to end up making a mistake and thinking, oh my goodness, look at this, a chalitza can get married to a kohen. I know of a case, right? So we would have to put a statement into the New York Times and the Sunday Times that say, be it known by these presences that this such and such a woman who ostensibly received chalitza on such and such a day turned out not to have needed that chalitza, and therefore may it be known that she can marry any kohen that she wishes. So you're going to have to do that. Says the Gemara, okay, so nimtzata matzricha kruz lakuna, so fine. So go ahead and put in an article. Velitzricha, so what? So what? What about if there's people who wouldn't look at the New York Times if you paid for them? And then they're not going to know anything about this. And anyway, we're going to be machshav people that they have to look at the New York Times. What are you kidding? Dilma ika inish tahave b'chalitza v'lo havei b'achrosa. There might be many fine people who know all about the chalitza, but you know the story. Whenever they put a correction in, nobody knows the correction. You know, they put the correction buried in the bottom of page 9 in the third column, you know, in small letters. You know, the report yesterday that so-and-so was convicted of stealing $500 million was completely false. Yeah, but that nobody hears that part. They only heard the first part. So the same thing is true over here. There'll be people that know about the chalitza, but they don't know anything about the announcement. And then they will go out and say, Kashari chalitza l'kohen. So because of that, we need to find out what the status is. We can't have this kind of situation coming up. So Amarle Abaya turns to Rabbi Elazar and says, look, besides the fact that your so-called raya was a little bit ridiculous because it didn't explain why it was. As a matter of fact, Tosef says, like, what was Rabbi Elazar thinking? A lot of Rishonim have different approaches. What could he have been thinking? But anyway, so Abaya says, but besides the fact that even if you were right, you were wrong, you're wrong. Because it doesn't say, you said, why can't she get chalitza? She can. Did it say anything about chalitza over here? Far as I look, let's read it together. Come, Rabbi Elazar. It says that she cannot go ahead. Lo tinasei velo tityabem. I don't see one word about chalitza there. You're the one who's stuck in the thing about chalitza, and you made a big fuss about it. So why can't she get chalitza? It never said she can't get chalitza, did it? So, midi lo tachalot velo tityabem katani. Is that what it said here? Boy, you almost got away with this. Lo tinasei velo tityabem is what it says. But that means without chalitza. Maybe if she wants to do chalitza even before the 9 months, like Rabbi Yochanan was saying, it may well be that that would be fine. As a matter of fact, it seems to me that there's more mashma like that. And even though Lamaisa, Rabbi Elazar wasn't able to find a place, the Gemara now does find at least a braita, and that goes according to Reish Lakish. It says like this. If somebody went ahead and did chalitza while she was pregnant, and then she ended up losing that child, so then she needs chalitza mina achin. And remember, we discussed earlier the different approaches. It tells us, what does that mean? Does it mean only chalitza mina achin is going to help because he already messed up his chalitza? It was a chalitza gerua. Does it mean she needs chalitza mikol ha'achim because of Rav? Does it mean she needs chalitza from any of the deceased achim? Okay, fine. That's a machlokas and zahab. But the bottom line is, certainly the chalitza that was given at the time that she was pregnant is not sufficient. And that is a raya to Reish Lakish. And in fact, in the end, Omar Rava, we paskin in three places in Shas. We paskin like Reish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan. One of them is this case that we just spoke about, and that is that the chalitza of a mu'uberet, even if she ends up losing the child, is not considered to be a real chalitza. So that was issue number one. Issue number two was another Mishnah as well, which there's a machlokas about how to understand. And that's another machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. So the Mishnah talks about over there somebody who is mechalik nechasav alpiv. Now, mechalik nechasav alpiv refers to a case where someone wishes to change the dinim of the Torah in terms of Yerusha. Well, you can't do that. And I shouldn't say that, because the truth is it's a machlokas if you can do that. But we know that it says about the Bechor, lo yuchal levaker et the Bechor ben ha'uva al pnei Bechor ben ha'snua. And the question is, the machlokas, whether that means, as we paskin, that you can't change any of the Yerushas in the Torah, or whether it's a din specifically in the Bechor, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, but other Yerushas you could change. So if you want to give one of your kids 30% and another kid 20%, you could do whatever you want. But we don't paskin like that. So therefore, if somebody wants to change, what can he do? So what he can do is, and we're talking over here, the case is that he's a Shchiv Mira. The reason we're talking about is the Shchiv Mira who's dying is because we want to talk about his pet. And that's only true about a Shchiv Mira. If a person in his dying moments, he says, I want to give this child this, and I want to give this child that. So remember the Chazal made a takana that Divrei Shchiv Mira are as if Ketuvim and Misurim, they do not require a kinyan. And the very seriousness of the moment is the equivalent of the kinyan. Fine. The same thing would be true if he's perfectly healthy and he wants to write a living will. What is a living will? A living will, even today, that's the word that's used. A living will, and it's a very useful ploy for nonprofit organizations to get donations. Because a living will is this. You give over, let's say, a piece of property. You own a shopping plaza. So you give over a piece of property to the charity, or in this case, to the child that you want to give it to, with the stipulation that until your own death, all of the income accrues to you. And the only rights that they have to getting anything out of this property is only after the donor's death. So then he gets a $100 million tax write-off because he donated his thing to. But he doesn't lose any income. So he sort of has his cake and eat it too. Okay, so now in this case, this is what he does to the particular children. So he gives one child a shopping plaza, one child an airport, you know, one child Tesla, one child his space things. Okay, fine. So all of that would be a viable gift. Now, the problem that viable gift creates is that technically speaking, what has happened over there is that he's given the kinyan haguf to the child, to the charity, and the kinyan peirot he retains, correct? That's the technical term. That if he keeps the peirot for himself, that's called the kinyan peirot. Now, it happens to be that there's a major machlokas about whether kinyan peirot give you the rights that a kinyan haguf gives you. We'll discuss this in a moment. But here's where things get complicated. If the guy is giving it over as a gift to his children, he must not use the word Yerusha. Because if he uses the word Yerusha, then he gets into another issue, which is called Matneh Alma Shekatuv BaTorah. A person cannot try to create a modality where he is saying that in this case, the dinim of the Torah do not apply. So it'd be like saying, I'm going to lend you money on condition that there's no Shemitah on this money. There is Shemitah on this money. The same thing is true over here. You can't say, I'm giving you this, even though the Torah said you're supposed to be getting a double portion because you're a Bechor, I'm giving that double portion to somebody else. Or you're supposed to get one out of 10 because you're one of 10 kids, I'm giving you 20% or whatever it is. So you cannot say as your inheritance. You can say as a gift, because then you're not being masa mashikatu b'Torah. Okay, so let's just see all of that inside. The Tanakh. Hamechalek nechasav alpiv. Somebody is giving out his property as a shchiv mira. Alpiv means just by saying it. He doesn't even need to write it. and doesn't even need a lawyer. So he's being mechalek because of Alpiv. Okay, now whatever he does, Riba le'achad, mi'et le'achad, he gives one kid more, he gives another kid the other. He does have a psychiatrist present. V'hishva lehem et ha'bechor, or he says the bechor is just like anybody else. And whatever he says, dvorav kayami, that's fine, because he gave these gifts while he was alive. But if he used the word, I want to give an inheritance, then the whole thing doesn't work. But if he uses the dirty word Yerusha somewhere in the gift, right? So let's say we write up a contract that uses the word Yerusha, as long as it only uses the word Yerusha somewhere in the contract, but at the end he makes it clear that it's a gift, that's okay. So, katav bein b'tchila, bein b'sof, bein be'emtza mishum matana, that would be okay. So let's say he says, my son George shall inherit such and such a field, and that's no good. But if he says, give such and such a field to my son George as an inheritance, that's okay, because he said give as a gift. It's in Hebrew, of course, you'd have to say as a gift. Tinatein, which is lashon matana. So if he said, give him sadeh plonit v'yirashena, or if he said, yirash sadeh plonit v'tinatenla, or if he said, yirash sadeh plonit v'tinatenlo v'yirasha, whatever. But as long as he mentioned, whether in the beginning, the end, the word gift, then it's okay. Because then he's just using the concept of inheritance as sort of a metaphor for the fact that these are his final gifts to his children, right? Now, there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Gemara is a little misleading because it's much Reish Lakish is arguing about the Mishnah. No, there's a machlokas over there between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in the event that there were, let's say, three children. And to one of the children, he says, let George, my son, inherit X, right? And let Joe, my son, be given Y. So now, if he used the word inherit on one son and he used the word be given a matana on the other son, is that the equivalent of making it clear that the whole thing is metaphorical as Yerusha, but he really means to give the matana? Or no, it has to be somewhere in the language of each son that it's a matana. Now, Rabbi Yochanan said, it doesn't matter. As long as somewhere in this contract, it's clear that he means it as a matana. So even though he jazzes it up with his, you know, last will and testament, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is, he said it should be a gift. That's fine. Reish Lakish says, oh, no, it's not. And he was referring to Rabbi Yochanan's statement. So Amar Reish Lakish, no, lo'olam lo'kana, unless he says about that son that there should be a netina. So Achi Amar ploni uploni yershu sadeh ploni uploni shenatatim lamba matana v'yershu. That you can get away with because you use the word matana. But if you didn't mention about the names of that particular child, and about one of the children used only the word Yerusha, that's not going to work. There, the halacha is also like Reish Lakish. And the third case where the halacha is Reish Lakish, the idach is another situation where over there, the tnan, and this has to do with what, in fact, is the disposition of that property in the interim while he's eating the peirot. Okay, so it says that in that case, what happens if we actually want to sell? That's the third thing. So there it says also in the Mishnah, also in Bava Basra, in these dinim of Yerusha, that if HaKotev Konech HaSav Livno L'Achar Moto, let's imagine a case, a guy gives a living will to a son, to one of his sons, and he only says it should be Chal, the Matona should be Chal, Mi'ayon M'La'achar Mita. So what we understand that to mean is that mehayom, you have a kinyan haguf, but you don't get any rights in the peiros until after my death. That's what he's saying. So then that's the equivalent. And we understand that to mean that the same thing would be true if you sell a field to sell the same thing. Wherever you use that language, mehayom alachamita, you mean the kinyan should be chal today on the guf hakarka, and the peiros should be chal only later. So, okay, so technically in legalese nowadays, that's called a condition on the usufruct. Okay. So you now have the use, so to speak, the peres, and you have the goof. What's the din if you want to sell? So ha'av inu yochol limkor. The father can't sell on his own. The two of them together could sell. But the father can't sell on his own because he already gave away this property to his son, right? So the ben wants to sell, but he can't, because if you don't own the peirot, then you can't sell because they're basically still in the reshus of the father for anything they produce. If the father did go ahead and sell, what's the din? So then temporarily, he sold whatever rights he had. He had the rights to the peirot, so then he sold the peirot until he dies. So at that point, it's mechur until that point. After that, the buyer gets nothing. How about if the son sold the properties? Then the buyer also has nothing until the father actually dies. Once the father dies, then the buyer gets everything because he had bought the rights to what would be also afterwards. But now the question was like this. What about if the son sells the field and then, lo and behold, the son dies before the father? In which case, he never ends up getting this field in terms of the rights to the peres, right? So there, the Meta Ben Bechayav. There we have the Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Mesh Lakish that we're referring to over here as the third case where the halacha is like Mesh Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan says, in this case, the buyer gets nothing. Even when the father dies, the buyer gets nothing. It goes to the Yorshim, to the regular Yorshim of the father. Why is that? Because the entire gift was a gift that is chal me'ayom v'la'achar misa, but then there never was me'achar misa because the son had died before. Whereas Resh Lakish says, no, as soon as the father dies, even though the ben had died previously, then he does have the kinyan that he was sold. What is the machlokas? The Rabbi Yochanan says the loker doesn't get anything if the son died first. Why? Because he holds kinyan peirot is kinyan haguf. And therefore, the father who was keeping the rights to the peirot to himself as long as he was alive, he was really the owner of the property as well during his lifetime. In which case, the son who is not yet an owner, even though it says the buyer doesn't get anything until the father dies, which is mashma, but if a son sells, so then it is considered to be a sale. But Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, of course it's considered to be a sale. But when there ends up being the death of the father before the son? But if the end result turns out to be that there never was a completion of this transaction, so then the most that he can do is sell the rights to whatever he will get, but he ended up never getting them. Because until that point, the father was considered to be the owner since he gets everything. So if the son doesn't outlive the father, then he's never getting anything, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Fine. Therefore, forget about it. Okay? Buyer, zilch. Okay, Resh Lakish says, no, you're kone. Why? Because Resh Lakish holds kinyan perod is lavke kinyan aguf dami. And therefore, it's a perfectly good sale. And therefore, the sale is chal right away. The buyer obviously doesn't get rights to the peres because the son himself didn't have rights to the peres to be able to sell. But the moment that the father dies, even if the son is no longer alive, at that point, that was the condition of the sale. And now the buyer gets also the right to the peres. So over here, Rava says, halacha is like Resh Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan in this as well. Fine. Now, let's move back to our Mishnah. Now that we've explored the Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, Resh Lakish, about the din of a chalitza during pregnancy, we can move back to the Mishnah. And the next thing that the Mishnah said is that ein avlat shel kayama, so then he keeps her as a wife. Reb Eliezer, however, argues on the Mishnah. And in the Braita, it says that Reb Eliezer is quoted, Mishum Reb Eliezer Amru, no, you have to get rid of this wife and you have to give her a get. And the reason you have to give her a get is because you were very naughty. And why were you naughty? Because you did a yibum to a woman that ended up thank heavens for you not being pregnant because it wasn't viable, but could very well have put you into a position where you were going to be over on an Isser of Kores. And if you do something like that to do an Isser, we don't allow you to benefit from the Isser. You say, well, I married her already, so I'm going to keep her. No, you're not going to keep her. You're going to get rid of her. So I have to give her chalitza? No. Obviously, you don't have to give her chalitza because the halacha is that if you did the yibum, it was okay. It's just a knas that we're giving you that you are mechuyev to now divorce her. So she really is your wife and therefore doesn't need yibum. But she does actually go ahead. That's the pashtus of what he's saying. And if that would be true, it's only true according to Rabbi Yochanan. You see, that's the problem. Because according to Reish Lakish, she really does need chalitza. So it's a bit of a tangle over here why the pshat that I just said was what Rashi said. But l'chora, according to Reish Lakish, which is what we just said, we paskin like, it would mean she also would need a get, but she would need chalitza too. Okay, that's a side issue. But now, moving on, is there in fact a knas in marriage of a pregnant woman where you weren't allowed to marry her? So, in this case, obviously, this case, it's doubly serious because marrying a pregnant, you're never allowed to marry a pregnant woman, as we're going to see. But, and therefore, we always have this din of you need to wait. So there's one halacha. But in this case, the halacha of not taking a yevama who's pregnant, whoa, that is much more serious. Because over there, the reason that you can't take her is because you may end up sleeping with someone that is a chi of kares. So that is extremely serious. So the question that we want to raise today is whether this is a general halacha, that somebody that went ahead and married a pregnant woman has got to give her a get, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So let's see what the case is. Omar Rav, I believe that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer both are saying the same things, namely that if someone was a naughty boy and he married a woman that he wasn't supposed to marry, even though there was absolutely no isser, subsequently it turns out everything's fine and there was no problem, nonetheless, you're not allowed to keep that woman and you have to give her a divorce. And what am I referring to? Well, I'm referring to the Rebbe Eliezer we just mentioned about the case of the Yavama that was taken while she was pregnant. And Rebbe Eliezer said, well, the Mishnah, the Tanakhama may hold that you're allowed to keep her, but I certainly don't. I say you're going to have to get rid of her. And Rebbe Meir, what I'm referring to is this braita. A man is not allowed to marry a woman who is someone else's wife who died. So now he got divorced. He cannot marry someone who was impregnated by somebody else that she was carrying now his child. And now he's marrying her. And he can't marry a woman who is nursing because of someone else's child. And the reason for this is, of course, all very biological to all of our safari attendees over there. And as you know, one of the first things that animals like to do is to get rid of the competitive children. So in this case, when a human marries in that situation, if he gets this woman pregnant, then if she's still pregnant, he may damage the chances of her current pregnancy of being successful. And in the event that it's talking about that she's nursing, or if ultimately she delivers this mu'ubara, then she ends up nursing, then he may end up killing that child by depriving the poor child of his source of maternal milk. Because if a woman gets pregnant, it usually will turn the child off of the milk. Therefore, the Chachamim said, do not marry a woman who is pregnant if it's not your pregnancy. And if you do, imnasa, then here's what Rabbi Meir says. You've got to get rid of her and you can never take her back. Why? Because you were naughty. Okay, so in other words, so Rabbi Meir holds that we give the guy a knas, right? Okay, so that's exactly what Rabbi Eliezer says. It turns out that this pregnant Yavama ended up not having that child. It wasn't viable. Nonetheless, Rebbe Eliezer says, I'm sorry, you're never allowed to keep her. You can't take her back. She's not your wife. You're going to have to give her a get, et cetera, et cetera. It's exactly what Rebbe Meir says, right? The Chachamim say, no, I mean, that's a bit extreme, don't you think? We do have to keep the two apart because we don't want her to get pregnant. And therefore, yes, you have to give her temporarily. You're going to have to get rid of her. But after the 24 months of nursing or whatever the situation is, whenever it's time to marry her, you can go back and marry her. It's not a permanent situation. That's what the Chachamim said. Therefore, you see the Reb Eliezer who says, no, it's permanent, it's a knas. And Rabbi Meir says, it's permanent, it's a knas. They're saying exactly the same thing. I'm going to buy exactly the same thing. What the heck? There's nothing in common. I don't understand. I mean, my Dilma Lohi, who says it's the same thing? Because, I mean, all that we saw so far is that Reb Eliezer says that if a guy is so naughty that he took a chance of actually being pogea in his eshet ach, which is an iser kares midiraisa. So you're telling me I give a guy like that a knas that he can't keep her. Fine, okay, I understand that. Does that mean that Reb Eliezer would also say that, oh, naughty, naughty, you married a woman who is pregnant and you never know, you might knock her off her milk. I mean, okay, so I was naughty, but how naughty was I, you know? It's not the end of the world. I mean, it's a drabbanan just to make sure that, you know, there's no ultimate. I mean, so because of that, we're going to asser them. The Reb Eliezer you're claiming would say we're going to asser them forever? Over there, it's an iser drabbanan. Maybe he would agree with the rabbanan that say, no, we just make sure that they're not married during this period where he might get her pregnant at the wrong time. But afterwards, he can go ahead and marry her. So over there, it's an iser drabbanan. Maybe he would agree 100% like the rabbanan, where I could say the opposite is true. I could say, in that case where he was naughty, Rebbe Meir says, look, if we don't back up an iser drabbanan with sufficient force, then people are going to end up just being mezalzel in the Rabbanan. And that is called the Rabbanan osu, because of their fear that people will ignore them, osu chizuk ledivrehem yoter mishel Torah. There's sometimes that we're more machron in the Rabbanan because of the tendency to be mezalzel in the Rabbanan. So maybe that's what Rabbi Meir is saying. We can't have people ignoring this kind of thing. And it sounds like, oh, come on. I mean, like, all right, you know, no, I really love my child, my wife's child, even if it's not my own. I will do anything to protect. And okay, fine. So I understand that people are going to say that. Because of that, we have to be very machmir. But in the case, what are we talking about, crazy people? In a case where somebody would marry a Yavama who might be pregnant and he might be actually sleeping with his brother's wife and be high of chorus. And I forget it. Who's going to do that kind of thing? Would I have to give a knas here because other people are going to do it? If you've got one crazy in the world, that means you've got everybody crazy. So maybe over there, Rabbi Meir would never agree. I don't see any connection. Ad kan lo kam Rabbi Meir, atam alo bishum de Rabbanan. And because of it, Chachamim asu chizuk b'divrayam yoter mishal Torah. Mashenkin over here by the case of the Yavama, it's a diaraita. And I mean, any normal person is going to be mifresh parshim. I mean, he's not going to take any chance. He's going to keep away from her. And because of that, Rabbi Meir might say, why in the world should we give him a knas when we don't need it? So therefore, there's nothing in common between what Rabbi Meir said and what Rabbi Eliezer said. They could both disagree with the other, and it would be no problem. Now, I just want to make sure we understand this. The guy who has forced to get rid of his wife who was pregnant from someone else before he married her, does that mean that he has to divorce her with a get? Or does it mean that they have to separate so that he doesn't end up getting her pregnant? Which one does it mean? Says Rava, it means that you need to give her a divorce. We don't rely on saying, well, you know, you'll have to separate. Yeah, right. So if you get a divorce, I understand. So then people are reluctant to have relations while they're divorced. So that at least assures a little bit more that he's not going to get her pregnant. So it says Marzuka, yes, if you take a look at the Lashon over here of the Braita, you'll see that Rava is right because it says Yotzi. Now, if all that the Braita meant was to separate, it would never have said Yotzi. It would have said Yafrish. So you have to be separated in order to make sure she doesn't get pregnant from the second husband. Shema Aminah. So Rava is clearly correct. We mean divorce. Omar Le, Rav Asher, Rav Oshaya, Bereda, Ravidi. You know, it's an interesting case Like, and it's very important over here anyway to deal with this question. We've spoken about it before, gentlemen, because we talked about the idea of a viable child. What does a viable child mean? So, as we explained before, there's a concept called kololo chadashav. Kololo chadashav means that we can tell by an examination of hair structure, nail structure, we can tell that this is a full-term gestation. So if kololo chadashav, the moment that the child is born, makes it into the world alive, fine. So then he is a vlad shel kayama. If we cannot determine that this is a full gestation, then we need 30 days to prove that. And this is all derived from the idea of ben shloshim yom tifteh when it comes to pidyon haben, that if a child dies before 30 days, so then the Torah is not mechayev you because you never had that child, essentially, right? Now, the question is like this. Supposing the child does die during those 30 days, but he died because he was in a car crash. He seemed to be a completely healthy child until this tragedy happened. So is that indicative of his not being a viable child? In other words, do we need proof positive? Or is it just the fact that he hasn't survived Shloshim Yom, that there he's not considered to be a Ben Kayama? And there's also a question. Would everyone agree that in a case where, let's just have a crib death? Now, a crib death, that in the Gemara, crib death is called Pihek Vemet. The kid yawns and never continues breathing. That's basically that syndrome of crib death, right? So now, there, it could be that everybody would agree. The fact that the child, for no reason that anybody can figure out, ends up not surviving for 30 days, maybe everyone agrees that that's considered to be not a vlad shel kayama. So basically, we have this machlokas. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says that kol shishahaba adam shloshim yom eino nefel. So an infant that survives less than 30 days is a problem. But once he survives 30 days, that's for sure is considered not to be a nefel. So he's considered to be a full-scale child. But that implies that in the event that he did not survive, so then it would be a suffix. Now, again, the suffix is the question of whether we need to describe the situation about being full term or not full term, and what the siba of the death was, whether it was explainable because it was a car crash or he was eaten by a lion, whatever the case is, or is it just, okay, let's ignore all of that for now. It's mashma that if he did not survive, so then it's a suffix. Now, itma, mate, betok shloshim yom, so suppose he dies within 30 days. And meanwhile, his mother goes and she's mitkadeshet as a yavama, and she assumed, Baruch Hashem, had a child, I'm free of Yibum, and now I'm going to go and accept Kedushin. So she goes ahead and accepts Kedushin from a guy. And the question was, what now? So Ravina says, well, being as it turns out over here, that she had accepted Kedushin, meanwhile, the child had died. So if she's an Eshet Yisrael, so then she needs Chalitza. Because, look, I mean, the bottom line is, maybe this child is a suffix. Maybe this child was not viable when he was eaten up by the lion or killed in the car crash. Again, it's a machlokas whether this means, even in the case of crib death. But let's assume we're talking about this case. So the child, it remains a suffix, right? And so that means that she was actually zekuka to Yibam. So now that means she's going to need chalitza to make 100% that there was no problem of Yibam. Okay, give her chalitza. Well, what if she accepts Kedushin from a Kohen? Now, if she had accepted Kedushin from a Kohen, if you give her chalitza, you can forget about that marriage. So what do we do over there? So therefore, says Ravina, that Rava said that in that case, if she's not married to a Kohen, so then give her chalitza, because what's a big deal? But if she is married to a Kohen, she doesn't need chalitza. Ain't a chalitza, because we're not going to be machmir on the suffix that maybe this child would have been considered to be a vla that's ena shokayama because he was killed in the car crash and so on. So memela, we don't do chalitza. Instead, we'll assume this was a vla shokayama, like most children are, and we'll say, okay, she already accepted kedushin. She should go and get married without chalitza to the kohen. Rimisharshia Mishmeda Rava says, no, I don't care if it's a Yisrael or a kohen. In either event, you need chalitza because it's a suffix. You can't just pretend that she was a chayeves in Yibum and take a risk of being over on a lav of lote eshes hamesa chutzo izar. So what's the idea over here of being allowing such a thing? So Omar le Ravina. So in both of these cases, you'll have to go ahead and do the chalitza. So Omar le Ravina le Rav Misharshia. So Rav Misharshia claims that Rava answered both, right? And Ravina said that no, Rava was being makel to the kohen. So what he says was, you know, it's true that Rava did say the night that you were in the Beis HaMedrash that she needs chalitza, even if she got kedushin from a kohen. Your problem is, my friend, is that you always show up late to Seder. So you weren't there the next morning when Rava said, I made a mistake last night, and I said that she should get chalitza, and she can't marry the kohen. In the morning, he came back, and he said, and that's what I was reporting on. In the morning, Rava came back and said, I made a mistake last night. If it's a kohen, then she doesn't need to get chalitza. So, but Zafra Hadarbe. So says Rav Misharshia to Ravina, oh, really now? He changed his mind, did he, in the morning? You want to be matir this case? I hope the day comes when the same thing will happen, that you go around and you say, this was mutter, because in the morning he turned out to say mutter, and it would end up being a piece of chalev, and everybody would see that you do heterim on chalev, you know? Horrifying what you do. Sharitu, ye rava de tishtraf tarba. One day you should go and be matar chalev too. There's all kinds of discussion. What it's talking about. Okay, so now, tomorrow, we're going to have to look into the question of whether Rava would also have extended this heter to the case where a guy had married a friend's mu'uberet, needed to give her a get, but he's a kohen, and if he gives her a get, he's not going to be able to remarry her. Would Rava say the same thing over there? To be continued with tomorrow's daf. Don't forget that Shmu is about to jump up and tell us. And as Barnea was about to, don't forget Rav Kaplan's fund. And just let me know, and we shall take care of it for you. Bezrat Hashem.
When Rebbe said there was a machlokas about what the case was about the child dying, was that machlokas the halacha, Rishonim, who's machlokas?
Yeah. It's a question how to understand the Gemara. Whether it's a din in the only in the Yom Shloshim, is it in the whole Shloshim? It's all kinds of complicated discussions, which is not directly nogea us. So I just wanted to mention that it's not necessarily as simple as it appears. Tosfos over here discusses it also, questions Rashi's reading. Fine. But again, it's like completely off of our topic. So.